Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Moments away, Stephen Biggs will be with us. But first, yellow jackets still flying around because it's warm in your area? Well, Rescue has the product to fix that.
Yeah, during these end of summer months, early fall, with the warm temperatures, you'll notice that the yellow jackets become more aggressive.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, they're looking for your barbecue meats. Maybe you're out for a Sunday brunch.
Or just trying to enjoy your backyard.
You want to keep them at bay with the Rescue Yellow Jacket traps. Rescue Yellow Jacket traps are eco-friendly, do-it-yourself option to keep these stinging pests away from you. These traps use a powerful lure for yellow jackets, and they will not kill beneficial bees or attract beneficial honeybees. All Rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com to find these products, including the yellow jacket traps and more. That's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Stephen Biggs is an author, horticulturist, college professor, and podcast host. He is passionate about incorporating edible crops into the landscape to create beautiful edible landscapes with a long and varied harvest. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day, not only educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the United States. You're in Canada, so I'll define that so people kind of know what we're referencing there. You grow in wicking beds. What are they, and what can be grown in a wicking bed?
I'm really excited about wicking beds because it's a pretty low-tech thing that a lot of people can do. So you can think of a wicking bed as nothing more than a raised bed with a reservoir in the bottom. So there's water stored in the bottom. And what happens is that water moves upwards. It's wicking upwards, called capillary action. And the wick is actually the soil. So it's a really effective and low-tech option that people can make at home or maybe buy. But the advantage to it is that the water is used very efficiently, and so it's often used in arid climates, places where there's water restrictions because there's less evaporation and you don't have runoff. And but it doesn't mean that you have to use it in an arid climate. Here in Toronto, we have ample precipitation, and it works really nicely for me. Now, we didn't actually put it in so that we would have to water less. We actually came to it in a completely different way. What happened is my next door neighbor has a big black walnut tree. And for listeners who don't know about black walnut trees, they can poison some of our crops, tomatoes being one of them. So we couldn't grow tomatoes in more than half of our backyard. And we tried a few different things. And then I got thinking one day, well, if I put in a wicking bed and my tomato roots never got into that walnut contaminated soil below, then we could grow tomatoes, and it's worked beautifully.
So when we talk about a wicking bed, are we talking about a fixture that is elevated above the ground, or is this encased in the ground but with a barrier to keep things from coming in and going out?
Well, you could do it either way.
Okay.
The ones that I've always seen have been raised above the ground, but there's no reason that you couldn't have it in the ground too. The other thing I should mention is that it's an idea that is scalable. So my particular beds, I made them 4 feet by 8 feet, raised beds, but you could do this on a far smaller scale too. And I've seen people, you'll hear it called sub-irrigation planters, but it's the same idea, wicking, where they have containers that have a reservoir in the bottom and you're getting the water to wick upwards. And in terms of making them, I'd really love people to take home the message that you can use recycled materials. I've seen people use old plastic shipping containers. In my own ones, I decided not to use dimensional lumber because I was able to get some old cedar fence posts, which worked beautifully, and they'll last longer than dimensional lumber. So I'd say if people are interested in this idea, don't be shy to be creative because you can really adapt it to your own situation.
Definitely very interesting. So you love growing figs and have two different books about growing figs. One is called Growing Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of Your Questions Answered, and then Growing Figs where you think you can't. So why figs? Mm-hmm. What are some challenges, and why are some reasons to grow figs?
Okay. Well, so for me in Toronto, obviously figs, I'm really pushing the boundaries, and that's a fun challenge for me. But the thing is with figs is that when you pick them and they're immature, they don't ripen anymore. But to be shipped, they have to be picked before they're perfectly ripe. So the ones that we might find at the supermarket, the so-called fresh figs, they're never as good and jammy and sweet as the ones that we can grow ourselves. So that's really the top reason to grow figs, aside from all the different varieties too. And a friend of mine here in the Toronto area was up to 300 different varieties, I think, at one point, all different colors and shapes and tastes. Key point about figs is that they can take more cold than a lot of people realize. And so what that means is that if we are creative gardeners, we can often find a way to make them work in cold climate gardeners. And if you're growing figs in the ground, I like to throw out about 14 Fahrenheit as a winter low. They can sometimes take colder than that too, but that's a pretty safe temperature. In pots, you can't go quite as cold, so probably 23 Fahrenheit is a safe lower limit. But what that means with those temperatures, if you're growing in pots, for example, I have an insulated garage, so I just roll my fig plants into the garage for the winter. If you're in a cold climate, and you have figs growing in the ground, some people in colder areas, like here in Toronto, they'll lay the plants flat to the ground and mulch them. Or some people build a structure around them. So if you're creative, you can get them to survive through the winter.
Very, very interesting. You like to do untraditional things with food. What is something that you've tried and now has become a favorite recipe or food hack that you've found on your own?
Well, Joey, I'll keep going on that fig theme is because I learned a couple years ago that you can actually use fig leaves in the kitchen. And when you use fig leaves, they're giving this really great flavor. There's a bit of almond, a bit of coconut, maybe some green fig in there, but it's a taste of its own. You're not actually eating the leaf, but you're pulling out that flavor. So my absolute favorite thing to make with it, it's a fig leaf panna cotta, which is just like a creamy pudding. But I had a chef on a recent podcast who gave me a whole bunch of tips on how to use fig leaves. And one of the things that he did was make a fig leaf grappa.
Very interesting. Well, tell us the story. Where in your life did the fig experience birth? Where was it? Somebody that showed you a fig or gave you a fig? How did that become a lot of your focus?
I started with a cutting as a teenager. I was an avid gardener even as a teenager. Didn't really know what to do with it, but over the years, I met a couple neighbors who showed me what they were doing with figs. But what especially sparked my interest was I worked at a nursery in the UK for a summer that specialized in figs. So I was grazing off fresh figs all summer, and that really, really cemented this fascination with figs.
Abby.
Well, you have a gardening podcast as well. It's the food Garden Life show. What is it about and how can people tune in and tell us more about it?
Oh, thanks, Holly. Well, the show is with my daughter, Emma, who's 16. And I should just say that she's kind of an over-the-top gardener like me. And so it's a passion that we share. And we had already a monthly radio show. But when COVID came and she was stuck home from school, we said, hey, let's just hang out and podcast weekly. So we started to share some of the things that really inspire us and kind of celebrating food gardens, food, but also that human side of gardening and people doing cool things. So we've got our shtick down pretty well now. Listeners don't see this, but we're always gesticulating as we talk to our guests and scribbling notes and trying to guide the conversation. And so we've had a lot of fun. Like recently we had a guy from Newfoundland, third windiest city in the world, telling us all about his root crops and passive greenhouse, or the Indiana Jones of pawpaw, telling us about how did he get into pawpaw and why did that consume his life. So it's been a fun project. And we have it on our website, which is foodgardenlife.com. But it's also on a lot of those syndicators like Google, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify. So if people just look up the Food Garden Life Show, that's us.
And you like us, people don't realize how many notes get shoved across the table back and forth and trying to decipher the scribbleness of what each other's saying behind the mic, so you don't have to say it out loud while things are going on. So you understand that as much as we do.
I'm happy to hear we're not the only ones.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You really enjoy gardening with your daughter, your children. What do you do to keep them involved and interested throughout their ages, from small to big? There's short attention spans. What have you found to keep them entertained and occupied and interested?
Well, so I should say my kids now, my boys are 12 and 13, and my daughter Emma, I mentioned, is 16. But when they were little, what I did is I just tried to show them all sorts of things in the garden beyond just growing plants. So whether it was making a mud pie or playing with bugs, maybe edible weeds, and just hope that something would click, thinking maybe it would be different for each kid. So one, it turned out, loves bugs. One was more interested in birds, and then Emma, it was tomatoes in a big way. Now my youngest guy, Keaton, is crazy for melons, and he was over the moon this year because he harvested a few melons. But I think a key piece of advice for parents would be we don't have to expect kids to garden the way that adults garden. It might be messy, might not be pretty, but the hope is that something will spark. And if you're not sure where to go, maybe pick a kind of project. One year we did a sunflower house. We planted a little square of giant sunflowers to make a little hideout for the kids. That was a huge hit. For my younger son, Keaton, I made him a bug vacuum. He loved it. People might want to think about a theme garden. If you have a kid who loves pizza, what about a pizza garden or a salsa garden? And I should say, too, though, don't be hard on yourself if it doesn't work out. I have two of my kids are avid gardeners now, but my middle one, Quinn, he's not interested. When I had them picking currants this year, he was equating that to child labor. So I jokingly told him that when he gets married, I'm giving him a currant bush.
And for people who are not familiar, what growing zone are you in Toronto? Because harvesting melons that far north, that's pretty impressive in my mind.
So we're in a USDA zone 5.
Okay.
Zone 5. But what we do is we grow the melons on our garage roof.
Ah.
We have a flat roof garage. It's very hot up there. And so the container gardening up there has been a great way to grow things like melons and okra and peppers, things that love the heat.
I'll be.
That's pretty smart, keeping it exposed to the sun and the heat. So we've really enjoyed having you on the program today, Stephen. How can people find out more about you?
I'm at foodgardenlife.com is my website. And on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, I hang out with the handle Food Garden Life.
And your books are available on your website as well?
Yes, thanks for asking. My books are on the website. So if you're interested in figs or lemons, those are some of my books on niche crops.
Yep, you can grow. You got a book, Grow Lemons Anywhere, I believe is the title. Is that correct?
Yeah, Grow Lemons Where You Think You Can't. And what a lot of people don't realize is, similar to figs, lemons can get a lot colder than people think. So for creative gardeners, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Well, Stephen, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us and the education and the knowledge you've shared. We thank you for that.
Thank you, Joey and Holly.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.